Hello, everyone. Welcome on back to the 40K segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. As the per the usual, I am your host, Vince Morgado. Rejoining us after an extended absence, Mr. Michael Schwartz.
Good evening, everyone. It's good to be back.
And Mr. Alexander Gonzalez.
As usual, how's it going?
So there was debate on exactly how to address this. We're going to do our best to keep it short and appropriate. As many of you are aware by now and will know as of this release, a good friend of the program, Jeff Robinson, has passed away of a sudden illness. We just wanted to put on record, we will miss him. He was a friend to us all, a good competitor, a legend in many circles, and we are all lesser without him. Jeff, we're all drinking for you tonight. But as Jeff would respect, we are all going to be focusing on our work, and we have plenty of work to do this week. It's leading off with WinterCon 2019, and I have to say, not a whole lot unexpected in this one, guys. I mean, between Chaos, Orcs, Drukhari, there just ain't a lot new here.
Well, you miss an Imperium there. Color me shocked.
You check the Imperium list and tell me if it's anything new, too.
Nope.
Man, it's almost like I knew what I was doing before that, because I did research today.
Ooh, actually, they're packing the new Scorpius Disintegrator. Nice. Three of those bad boys. All right, so that's new. There you go.
What is, Mike, pray tell, the Scorpius Disintegrator?
Ooh, okay. So
yeah,
the
Scorpius, I have no idea what that is either.
Really? Okay, the Scorpius Disintegrator is a new hotness for good old AdMech. It basically looks like a hovercraft D-Day carrier, but you stick a bunch of guns on it. Bear with me for a second as I
load. It's the World War II. It's the wannabe Higgins boat.
Yeah, exactly. It's a wannabe Higgins boat. It's actually packed. So this is the shooty version of it.
Yes. Because it's the enclosed version.
Exactly. So people who don't know, basically picture a Higgins boat, color it red, add a lot of AdMech mumbo jumbo to it, and you got yourself a model. And
It's got a 36-inch range, heavy D6, strength 7, AP minus 2, D3 damage primary. You can also swap that out for what looks like the equivalent of a crack missile launcher, only except three shots, the Faramite cannon.
Yes, but you also coming with a disruptor missile launcher, which is D6, strength 7, minus 2, D3 D3 damage, and each one is also packing three Cognis heavy stubbers. So that's basically 9, 18, 27 strength 4 shots coming at you. So it's potent for like the cheap points of what it is. They've run the math. They've figured that it is the most point efficient in terms of wound damage vehicle for that's available to AdMech right now. So what you're going to see is people are going to take these things, at least competitive AdMech players are going to take them over the Onager Doom Crawlers.
And he paired this with 1, 2, 3, 4 tank commanders in two battalions, one Cadian, one Vestroian, which is always nice to see, a big old block of Bulgrins with two Astropaths, and the classic, 3x10 mortar heavy weapon, the 3x3 mortar squads.
Yeah, this ain't very original, with the exception of
hotness. Yeah, I mean, plus, I have to say, welcome back. We can officially say welcome back to Lehman Russ main battle tank. Woo! I think it's time to just, the tyranny of the Castellan has ended, and it's now time to bring back the far more iconic units that also were. Just they take a little bit more skill, but I didn't say that out loud.
Vince, real quick, Vince, you got something on you. I think your bias is showing.
I think Reese said it 3 months ago, so I don't feel any shame at all.
Hey, look, as long as we see a Lehman Russ in the new Eisenhorn TV show, whenever that gets actually made, I'll be a happy man. Yeah.
For those of you who don't want to talk about that real quick.
Yes, please. Can we? I've been waiting to talk about it for like 10 days.
Well, that's your fault.
No, it's my job's fault. Let's be real.
I will say this. It is in development. It's not even in production. Mm-hmm. And as anybody knows, in development means they probably don't even have they have a concept. They have maybe a pilot. They probably haven't even started casting it yet.
I know, but like, can I start wishlisting who I want to play whom?
I'm going to cut you off by saying I think an Armageddon War series would be a lot better.
Maybe, but Eisenhorn is like a good introduction because it's far less 40 yeah. Emperor and more like Stealth and Dagger. Welcome to the culture of the 41st millennium. Then you can lead that off into other things.
Yeah, can I have it on HBO?
What?
Can I have it on HBO?
Well, HBO might pick it up out of sheer desperation and call it Game of Thrones in space. And
oh my god.
So, you know, it is what it is.
As long as I get Liam Cunningham in some capacity, I'll accept this.
Yeah, there you go. See, we are all wishlisting. But yes, anyway, super excited for that. Hopefully it goes out of the development warp hell and into actual production reality. But in the meantime, on to something more real. The lists and the GTs.
Wait, Alex, we got to give Alex a chance to jump in on that. We cut him out completely.
You're right.
Yeah, well, thank you, first of all.
I'm missing two, Alex.
I know that apparently what they said that the director would be the guy who did the Man in the High Castle. Yeah. I have heard fantastic things about that show. I have not seen a single second of it, so I don't know what that means exactly.
It suffered a little bit from the same thing as Game of Thrones, where when they ran out of other people's, smarter people's material, it started to wander.
Yeah, well, that's natural. That happens.
Well, lucky for us, they have about 2 million pages worth of source material, so hopefully they'll never run out of ideas.
Oh, yeah. Truly, we'll not run out of material for Warhammer. So, I wish them the best of luck, but what I really fear is that if you do something bigger than, like you mentioned, Michael, being able to do something like Eisenhorn, where it's a bunch of Inquisitors and it's Underhive stuff or behind the scenes, you can get away with obvious like Cadian or Imperial like humans pretty well. You can kind of stretch it with some good cinematography to make a good space scene, I'm sure. But like once you start getting into like Xeno stuff and big picture stuff and big battles, like I fear unless you have like a Game of Thrones budget, it's just going to come off like campier than Doctor Who.
Yeah. You know, the other one I would love to see is if they did Gaunt's Ghosts a la Band of Brothers.
Make that against Traitor Guard versus like a Gaunt's Ghost thing, you can actually get away with a lot with very little size.
Well, that's what Gaunt's Ghost is. I mean, the Sabbath Crusade is against like essentially Traitor. I mean, like it is chaos, but like it's mostly
Astartes.
Yeah.
Or the Vrax Crusade wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, yeah, you could.
The Vrax Crusade would be 100% bad.
Why?
The final battle of the Vrax Crusade would be like a Return of the King battle.
Yeah, yeah, Alex is right.
With a culmination of like a 5 foot nothing Inquisitor going up against like a 60 foot tall, exalted Greater Demon of Khorne. I kind of think that would be above budget.
Alex got a point.
Didn't they say that the last season of Game of Thrones was the most expensive piece of media ever developed?
Yeah, like $5 million an episode or more.
Well, it was more than that.
I think it was the most expensive season of television. All the Marvel films have budgets that are insane.
$200 million. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was definitely the most expensive season of television, but comparing to some of the production that Disney does, it'd be kind of interesting. Oh man. Oh, what happens if Disney buys Games Workshop?
They won't.
Is there any? I haven't heard anything about that.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's not happening. They're not ever going to touch anything with Slaanesh in the house.
I mean, that's not the reason why they wouldn't touch it, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Either way, super excited. Hopefully this show gets made. And Vince, I also hope the Gaunt's Ghost / Band of Brothers-esque show would also be made, because that would be also amazing. But at least we have potentially one live-action TV show. Woo!
And where there's one, there can be many. Just ask Star Trek and the number of failed shows they've had. Let's drag this train back onto the tracks, though. Let's take a look at Matt Morisoli's list, and we'll start there. I'm looking at Chaos Undivided, Battalion, A Demon Prince, A Poxbringer, 40 Bloodletters, 27 Plaguebearers, Change cast. So this is another undivided battalion. A change caster, Herald of Slaanesh. 20 horrors, 10 more horrors, 20 more plague bears. And the last one is another battalion. I don't understand where he's finding all these points. Ahriman, a Demon Prince of Tzeentch, a Demon Prince of Tzeentch, and 2x10 cultists and 20 Zangors. So he just brought every single thing that he's allowed to bring out of the Demon Codex. Like, he just brought a little bit of everything.
I mean, this list is super potent. He's got the Blood Litter Bomb. The Zangors are pretty good themselves, and they can drop in. He's got a lot of board control. The Herald of Slaanesh, is he just there because he's super cheap? Or, oh, Symphony of Pain, that's a good second power. Maybe. Yeah, everything else, this thing is... Yeah, I mean, take the best units in Chaos. Sprinkle on some command points. Go to town.
I think we have to applaud Games Workshop overall for how the Demon Codex turned out, because one of the problems that we've all seen over our time here is the troops often get left behind. Like, they're either just stupidly underpowered and unusable, or there's only one good choice and people just spam that. It seems like literally every single one of the troops available to Demon players is either above average or exceptional.
I think they've done a good job. It also helps that you can repoint these things now every single year or every half year, essentially, as opposed to like every 5 years.
Oh, that helps a ton.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, you guys went into that in detail on the AOS show.
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. So it's one of those things of just how everything gets repriced and repointed, a constant meta adjustment. It's a very good time to be in the hobby, simply because, I mean, God, Alex, Vince, you also remember the times where, like, what was it, Space Wolf 5th edition, where those long fangs were just dominant.
I don't ever want to hear these words again.
Well, yeah, I mean, heck, even in this week's, like, AOS episode, we did expand on this a little bit more, too. Like, the fact that Games Workshop, for both their two most popular game systems, is doing regular updates, you know, like Chapter Approved, where we're able to get these points adjustments, you know, making things that maybe are less popular, or, you know, honestly, quite frankly, maybe aren't being bought as much, a little bit better or a little bit cheaper, and then making things that are kind of a little abusive or a little bit more common or popularly used, you know, maybe getting a little bit of a points adjustment in one way or another. You know, you don't always have to be as dramatic as the 100 points added to the Castellan, but I think that was much more of a response to community outcry more than, you know, oh, this is really strong. I've always had it in with, you know, or my curiosity has always been really high with playtesters about, you know, points adjustments and things. I think that the playtesters have a lot of responsibility to make sure that we do that they have a good understanding as to what is, you know, very, very strong and what is not right now. And with Games Workshop, just a couple of weeks after AOS's equivalent of Chapter Approved General's Handbook, just a few weeks after that, a lot of the armies that had come out in 6 months prior, which is normally, you know, a zone or a buffer zone where you're immune to points changes, got a points change because they were like, well, we realize that it's dominating the community and this is super strong and it deserves a little bit of an adjustment. So I think that a lot of 40K players might be surprised later in the year if they have a codex that comes out, say, next month or some sort of 40K release.
And, oh, they totally will.
They don't get touched by Chapter Approved. They might get touched a little later in an FAQ.
Speaking of getting touched, does anyone look at the third place list? This guy, I believe it's straight Slaanesh, but I want you all to look at it. Kieran Howard.
Keeper of Secrets.
And just look at the first attachment.
Fuck me. Yeah.
Remember when certain people said the Keeper of Secrets wasn't going to be good?
I mean, it helps when you bring four of them, essentially.
Yeah. Do you like Crow well done or medium rare?
Yeah, you look at it. He's bringing three Lord Discordants. Oh, no.
Well, I mean, isn't that kind of the game now? Is if something is good, you max out your choices of it?
Yeah, so he's bringing four Keeper of Secrets, three Lord Discordants.
He literally brought three Keeper of Secrets and the unique Keeper of Secrets. Three Lord Discordants.
The contorted epitome.
It's epitome.
Oh, whatever. The epitome, the contorted epitome, who is also bomb. The tallyman, foul black. all right. So
this is good old fashioned Monster Mash.
Yeah, seriously. Actually, I was gonna say, how does he hold an objective?
He doesn't.
He just destroys you.
What happens is you hold an objective, he takes it from you.
Yeah, I can see that.
And then he moves on.
Yeah, this is kind of amazing. I'm man, if I had enough Keeper of Secrets, I would be totally running this list.
It's an in-your-face list, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, no kidding.
And because it's so low drops, I think he can actually afford to deep strike all of the all four of the Keeper of Secrets.
I love that it's four keepers.
You know, if one isn't good, sometimes four is. Yeah, there's like he just decided that no, every podcast in the world is probably wrong, because I don't think you guys were far off in saying this wasn't going to be good compared to everyone else. I feel like that was kind of the consensus, was that they were too expensive, their save was bad, and they weren't fast enough. I think I was the one who said, you know, you guys do know what happens if this guy makes that first turn 30-inch charge, right?
Well, with things that are very killy, that are fragile, that is going to be something that's really important. I mean, I've been looking at a lot of Chaos Knight stuff lately, and one of my biggest takeaways with that, you know, not to completely go back into, you know, the previous episode, but, you know, if you, most armies have the ability to kill a knight now, but they're so, you can make your knights so, like, absurdly quick in a Chaos army that it's like they can move around bubble wraps. They can easily have multiple knights do turn one charges on less than ideal deployments. Like, it's so being able to have a keeper or multiple keepers, yeah, sure. Yeah, just like you mentioned, you know, you might not always have the strong, you know, most resilient army, but hell, you can get up the table as soon as possible and just wreck base, more power to you.
I mean, this is basically what this army's designed.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I'm really surprised he didn't take the Vigilist detachment. I never remember the exact name for the triple discordance.
You didn't
that means that you see a lot of.
I mean,
it doesn't cost points.
Well, what was I thinking about? He didn't need to.
What were you thinking about?
Yeah, I was thinking about AOS. I'm an idiot. That's what I was thinking. He doesn't have the command points for it. He's only got 1, 2, 3, plus another 3. He's got 6 command points.
Listen, there are a lot of lists coming out that do not rely on heavy command points.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Anything else coming out of WinterCon? I do feel bad for the two guys, for the guys who brought Dark Eldar. You know, they were really confident until they showed up and probably saw what was hitting the top tables. You know, it doesn't last very long against 4 Keepers of Secrets. Talos. That's what.
Yeah, that's fair. Ravagers? Oh, I don't know if you can touch them.
I mean, I do want to, you know, give a shout out to, if I can get this gentleman's name right. I apologize. I think this might have been a lady, Eleanor Byler, going full on Venom spam, but then backing it up with Urien Rekarth, who we don't see very often, backed it with 25 racks and 8 grotesques.
I mean, that's
which is actually, that's just dirty. That's
solid,
just dirty.
Wall. Oh, that's a solid wall of, like,
it's flesh. It's a wall of flesh.
Wall of flesh.
And respect that she didn't go. Sorry, go ahead, Schwartz.
You and I were talking about something. Solid wall of flesh backed up by a truck ton of shooting.
Yeah, double Razor Wing with a Void Raven. And I do want to give respect that she didn't just go full on Talos spam. I mean, she brought 4, but when you can bring 9, it's not quite the same.
Well, there you go.
Anybody else jump out? We got a gentleman coming in 6 with, I hope it's pure custodes. Please give me this.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Valoris, a Praetor, 3 Caladius, then a Shield Captain on a Dawn Eagle jet bike. And then let's count them up. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 Praetor jet bikes.
Count them with me. Jet bike.
You know, whatever happened, it worked out to be a very wide range of lists. I mean, you have, you know, Chaos Troop spam at the top. You've got my own Imperial Guard-ish in second place. Monster Mash Chaos in third. Liam Hackett's Orcs. I want to see if there's anything special about. Nope, there's not. It's just all the Gretchen in the world. Jeremy Wales and Eleanor bringing in Dark Eldar. I mean, if you round out, we're looking at, what, 8, 7 factions represented in the top 10 of this event. 1, 2, 3. Including Leigh Abbey with Tyranids. Hell yeah.
There you go, man. It's a diverse meta.
I fuck with it.
Hang on. Did they bring Distraction Carnifex? Oh, nope. I don't think we're going to see another copy of that list again. I'm not going to lie. Schwartz, well, you missed that one, Alex. Did you remember the list? The guy from last week with the 6 Carnifexes?
Dude, wow. I fucking love that. I think
it was amazing.
A Distraction Carnifex list, I am all for it. In fact, it needs to be a thing again.
I mean, it does need to be a thing again.
I like how people have been describing units as Distraction Carnifexes. I honestly think that it's... So, like, if your unit has become so well-known as a distraction that people will describe a completely different unit as a Distraction Carnifex, dude, like, slow clap. Like, you're there. Yeah, you made it.
It just means that we need to see the original and not the bad ripoffs.
I mean, I just like how they're talked about.
Yeah. Next up, we have TJ Lanigan continuing his dominance at the Toronto Games Expo. Let's see how much has changed. All right, everybody, count them up with me. The Changecaster, the Poxbringer, the Bile Piper, 28 Pink Horrors, 56 Plague Bears, 2 Winged Demon Princes of Tzeentch, a Demon Prince of Nurgle, and the Blight Lords. Nothing has changed. all the respect in the world to you, TJ. You keep doing you, brother.
Yeah. I mean, it works.
I also really like, I just want to point this out. He had a less battle points than the guy that came in second by 50. By zero.
50?
Yes. The other, Devin Swan, who came in second with Tau Empire, had an average of more than 10 points higher than him, or almost 10 points higher.
So what you're telling me is the first place finisher outsmarted and strategically won his games. The second place finisher just blew him off the table.
Just boarded people.
Yeah, that's 38, traditional 32, foul for you.
37, 35, 33. And then he lost. He put up a fight, I think, against TJ. 29-27 was the final.
Wow, that's a close game.
Yeah, that's got to hurt. Let's have a look, actually, at that Tau list from Team Canhammer, coming out with kind of alternate Tau list because he brought Longstrike and 3 Hammerheads and 3 Skyrays, and then a unit I don't think any of us have ever seen on a table ever, 3 Sunshark Bombers.
Oh.
I have. What are you talking about?
I have never seen these on a table ever.
Look, I need to...
Oh, dude, an early 8th.
I need to pull up the stats on these bad boys because I don't even know what they do.
Schwartz hasn't seen them either. They have a pulse bomb, if I remember correctly, is kind of what makes them special.
Yeah, but it's like, cool, I got a pulse bomb.
All right, so let's pull up the Sunshark Bomber. Well, movement 20-50. Surprise, surprise, it's a freaking flyer. Ooh, only BS4. Ew. Seeker missiles.
Dude, yeah, it's
so it's got an ion rifle, which people don't know, heavy D overcharge at heavy D3, strength 8, minus 1, 1 damage each, blah, blah, blah. Seeker missiles, missile pod. Oh, it's packing marker lights itself. That's pretty good.
It has one network marker light.
It can also attach drones to it? That's weird. And it can bard upon it.
It has 2 interceptor
Interesting.
Drones.
This model may drop a pulse bomb as it flies over enemy units in the movement phase. To do so, after this model has moved, pick 1 enemy unit that moved across, then roll a d6 for each model in that unit. Ooh, only up to maximum of 10. All right, that would have been better if it was like unlimited. Adding 1 to the result if the unit is infantry. For each roll of a 5 plus, that target unit suffers mortal wounds. So basically, if you're doing it right, you're on a 4-up, like with... you're rolling 10 dice on a 4 up. Each one's a mortal wound. That's not bad. I mean, I could see how against like...
No, but it puts out a lot of shots, though. Like, if you count all this thing's guns, it's not, you know, it's not a docket jet, but it's a respectable amount of guns between the missile pods and the ion
interceptor
rifles.
Drones. That's true. Each one's packing 2 ion rifles. The pulse bomb's an additional thing. You can give it 2 additional. You can give an additional missile pod. So it's got 2 seeker missiles, 2 missile pods, 2 ion rifles. All right, I've seen worse.
Hey, the only thing about it is it's just squishy. I mean, 12 wounds with a 4-up save. It cannot ever leave supersonic, though, so you are always at a minus one to hit it.
Why would you want to?
Yeah, but that's very typical. That's very typical of Xeno Flyers. Yeah,
that's true.
That's true. They do not have the same multi-role necessity of most of the Imperium vehicles. But it's just different. I mean, that's what I wanted to point out. This is different.
Yeah, it's okay.
We had Paul come on last week, who was, you know, kind of talking about how, I don't want to say boxed in a lot of Tau players are, but clearly Devin Swan is not among them. And he deserves applause for A, bringing, and B, fucking dominating with kind of an alternative Tau list.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, the Hammerhead gunships with those ion cannons accompanying Longstrike, they are packing a lot of heat. You just got to keep Longstrike alive. If not, that army...
Yeah, this guy has no bubble wrap.
Yeah.
Like, if he was probably reliant on, you know, pretty good matchups, but if he had run into Gene Stealer Colt, I cannot imagine that game would have lasted very long.
No, it wouldn't have. I can tell you that right now.
Alex settling the bet for us. But yeah, I mean, he did what everybody's always wanted Tau players to do, which is bring all the marker lights. He brought all the Seeker missiles, and then he just lit it up with the Sun Sharks and the Hammerheads. Simple as that, I guess. Shooting.
Well, it's not that much
shooting. It's not that much shooting. It had to be efficient. I mean, he probably had to. That was a lot of focus fire.
I mean, he is packing a ton of marker lights, so.
I think it's 12 if I counted correctly.
12, 15, no, sir. Oh, wait, no, you're right. No, 15? I was counting that wrong. My apologies. You're right, 12.
Ooh, of somewhat fame, Diogo Pita coming in fourth place with Eldar. Go ahead and take a look at that.
Yeah, he lost his first round and then went undefeated the rest of the way. We had a submarine.
Yeah, submarine.
Oh, no.
On the 1MC, dive.
Wow. Same one you used.
But also,
me.
We do have
the same one you used.
The same one we use. That's
dive,
right. It's
dive,
all, it's one
dive,
for the whole
dive.
Show. Yep. Venom spam Dark Eldar, backed up by Count Umba. Alex, I need your best Count voice.
Oh Jesus! I don't want to do this. No, I don't want that to be a thing. we're just gonna ignore that here. We're gonna ignore that here. Just keep on going.
What? We're not gonna talk about the 1, 2, 3,
four, five, six, seven, eight
flyers. Count them, 8 flyers, 2 Razor Wings, 3 Void Ravens, and 3 Crimson Hunter Exarchs.
That is...
maximum cheese.
And he's also packing 7 Venoms. I mean, that's just a ton of hover things.
Yeah, that is a fun list.
I can hear I can feel Alex's sarcasm all the way to here.
Honestly, it wasn't as much sarcasm as I intended, but it definitely came off as, like, super heavy.
Wow, that is
Like, at what point are they going to address Crimson Hunter Exarchs? Like, are they next on the list? Are they officially the new boogeyman after Castellans? Because this is getting fucking ridiculous.
No, because if that's the case, then they've always been a boogeyman, because they've always been good.
That's true. I don't think anyone is happy about the fact that Dark Eldar Flyers are, I'm not going to say unbeatable, but extremely unfun to play against.
Let's be real here, Vince, though. It's not Dark Eldar Flyers. It's Eldar Flyers. And the fact that Dark Eldar can take Eldar Flyers.
All right, that's fair. I'll give you that.
I mean, no one's bitching about a Razor Wing Jet Fighter. It ain't bad, but it ain't fantastic either. It's a Crimson Hunter that everyone's pissed about.
That's true. I mean, look, the Void Raven and the Razor Wing are not bad. They're just not nearly as multi-purpose. I mean, the Star Cannons, you can just put them on anything. Well, whereas the Dark Eldar Flyers are pretty much infantry only.
Yeah.
So,
although the Void Ravens, I guess, can kind of step out of there because they have the Void Lances. But other than that...
Hold up. Let me pull up the profile of a Void Raven to give you what the info is. So, hey, I think a Void Raven...
I mean, I can tell you what it is right now. It's just a basic fighter. It's kind of like a Crimson Hunter, but cheaper and less effective. Dark Lances, rather. So
that sounds like you're talking about the Razor Wing, brother.
Oh, we're talking about the Void Wing Bomber. Yeah. Okay. Void Wing Bomber. Well, it's got a huge model, first of all.
It is a monster.
Its missiles that it has can be a little silly, and you can kind of pick and choose what type of missile it is. So,
I mean, so here's a full profile. It's got two dark scythe. The ones he's packing, for example, is two dark scythes, which is each one's assault D3, strength 8, minus 4, D3, but only range 24. So there you go. It's got this mighty void mine, which is once per battle over the movement phase, which is exactly as the same thing as the Shun Shark Bar, but only roll 3d6 for each vehicle and monster in that unit that you fly over. On a d6, on a roll of 3, that unit suffers a mortal wound. Or actually, it's better than the Shun Shark Barmer because you can also roll a single dice for up to 10 d6s for every single infantry model. So it's actually better. But, I mean, yeah, so it's got Dark Scythes and it's got Void Mines. Yay?
Yeah, and it's they did keep the what you would call mission variable if you were a tryhard with the Void Raven missiles, either the Implosion if you're looking to bust armor, or the Shatterfield if you're looking to clear out infantry.
Yeah, so I mean, it's cute. I mean, but it's fun. I'm sorry, but it's like 165 points.
It's cheap.
It's cheap, but it's got a 4-up save. It's toughness 6. It's only 12 wounds. If you actually dedicate some anti-shooting to it, it's going to go bye-bye.
I wish the Hydra was playable.
The what?
The Hydra.
The Hydra? Oh, yeah. Fair point.
You know, just imagine. I it's probably a good thing that the Hydra's not playable because it would just be one more thing with an arm with, well, I'm not going to say with an armor value anymore. One more vehicle that a guard player can park in his backfield and go, no, you don't get to leave your employment zone.
I mean, yeah, I think the Void Raven's fine. I think really the problem with, to truth be told, the Eldar Flyers is that you can just stack all those minus ones to hit on top of it with Altioch and as well as the stratagem. So, for example, Dark Eldar, it's only the minus one, but with the Crimson Hunters, you can get up to a minus 3. So that's the big killer.
Yeah, he brought the Void Ravens because in this configuration, he brought it just to bust armor, like heavy, you know, heavy armor units. Between the Dark Sides, which that's a hell of a profile. Assault D3, Strength 8, AP minus 4, D3 wounds.
Yeah.
That's he brought that for Custodes, I think.
Oh, for sure. You kind of have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because you ain't going to kill Custodes with Venoms and Cobblites, I'll tell you that right now.
No, you could easily, you know, gone are the days where, you know, you could just be like, well, I can completely rely on the fact that I have lots of shots, especially against Custodes. Like, it will ricochet.
Yeah, they're just so tough, and they have so many of them. They're really good. All right.
Anybody else out of TGX you guys find interesting?
No.
All right. Let's go ahead and jump over to the Show Me Showdown. I love that name, by the way.
You would.
That sounds like a Midwest event, I have to admit. Matt Root coming in first place with how many acolytes can I fit in one list?
The answer is...
count 40. Ooh, I count 40 acolytes. No, 60 acolytes, 20 brood brothers. And then a gigantic brick, a medium-sized brick of the Jackals with the demo charges.
A question,
which we all know I am a huge fan of.
A question, Vince. What is the borderline between medium and giant-sized brick of Jackals?
10 plus.
I see. Okay.
Have you seen how much room 10 Jackals takes up on the table?
Actually, yes.
Okay. I rest my case. and then the obligatory... Ooh! My hero, Matt Brute, Broad Executioners. Ladies and gentlemen, there is a god.
Calm down.
For those who don't know, I'm referring to the executioner, the Lehman Russ executioner, with one of the most underrated plasma cannons in the game, and that more people should take. Anyway.
I have so many questions by that statement.
I have a very simple answer. Vince is stuck in 2007.
Okay, thank you. that
course. Alex, to be fair, it's 2011.
Okay, great. 2011. Perfect.
just because I won my only event with them and they did really well for me, and I want them to be as good as they were back then.
God, so many things have changed since 2011. I'm just looking back.
Yeah, and some things haven't.
Okay, moving on.
Some things have changed and some things haven't. Like, Flyers are still really fucking good.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Though we don't have Vendettas anymore.
Right? Isn't that right, croissant boy?
Or what? Me? Huh?
Moving on. Can we
hang on? So who wants to, so wait, let's just ask, who wants to bet that Ben Sherwin brought Flyers?
No, it's not about if he brought Flyers. Let's put a bet in real quick before we check. How many Flyers did he bring?
I'm betting six.
Damn it. I was going to say 6-2. I'm going to bet seven.
All right.
Okay, I'm going to count them up. I'm going to say four.
Mm.
Okay. Alex, you lost. Schwartz, you got it because he brought in a Hemlock Wraithrider for number seven.
Dude, Victor goes to the spoils.
Three Razor Wings, three eggs, three Crimson Hunter eggs arcs, and he slapped in a Hemlock Wraithrider so I could lose.
Oh, man.
Then he brought Triple Night Spinner and three Wave Serpents. What was he carrying in the Wave Serpents? He has no infantry. Literally, he has no infantry.
He was carrying guns.
It's all, he brought two air wings and a, what's it called when it's the heavy supports? Spearhead. Yeah. He's got one Farseer and three Night Spinners, and then he slapped three, Wave Serpents. This is straight up all vehicles and one guy on a jet bike.
So he's essentially the used hover salesman of the Eldar world.
Yeah, he's the used car salesman of Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, it's like, you guys want some Wave Serpents? Brand new. Only 6 years new. Hasn't been destroyed by the warp more than twice.
Oh my God. I mean, you know what it is? It's the joke James Bond says to Zukovsky in GoldenEye. It's like, who needs planes? I have six. Three. None that fly. That's what this is.
This is insane. Okay, I mean, the Wave Serpents are actually pretty good. They're decent shooting platforms, truth be told. So, and they're not.
Okay, but like, why not bring Fire Prisms?
Because they're more expensive.
Yeah, because they're way more expensive.
Because you wouldn't be able to fit them. Yeah.
Just drop the Hemlock.
But then you wouldn't have the Hemlock.
Oh, I'd rather have a Hemlock over a Fire Prism.
Yeah, seriously, I'd rather.
Well, but you'd rather have a Hemlock and three Wave Serpents over a not Hemlock and three Fire Prisms?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
There's enough anti-tank shooting with the Crimson Hunters, the Razor Wings, the freaking Night Spinners. Wow. Yeah, no, he's fine. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
You take the Wave Serpents.
God, this list just makes a joke of any kind of tactical maneuvering. It just does. It just does. Like, it doesn't matter. You can't leave any kind of small unit on an objective because it will die instantly to the Razor Wings and the Night Spinners. You can't assault it because, cool, you killed my Night Spinners.
Oh, no.
You can't do anything about flying around.
Wait, that's not... No. That's the problem. He can't... If you kill
everything... I bet you it has never happened to him.
Goddammit. Well, I mean...
I will take your money.
You really think that he has never lost a game because someone was smart enough to target everything that's on the ground? That's...
Yes.
Okay.
Alex, back me up on this. Do you think it has ever happened?
It depends on the players in his area. A smart player who has the tools to do so should absolutely do so.
He only needs...
Yeah, but isn't that going to be... It would only happen if somebody headhunted him.
No. No, not in this edition. I feel like in this edition, there's plenty of armies with just sufficient firepower on average to just take out
everything. Three Wave Serpents and a freaking Farseer.
Well, you also have... No, you have to kill the Farseer. You have to do something on the order of 70 to 76 wounds against a 3-up, including against the Wave Serpents that are a little tougher to kill than normal.
I mean, well, you might not be able to do it turn one, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, you can definitely do that turn two or three.
Not after the fighters are done with you. Mm.
We'll see. We'll talk.
A gene stealer called Army could do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank you. There are ways of getting that. If something can infiltrate or deep strike in there, or Kaladesh could do it. Kaladesh kills out the Farseer, and then you shoot the Wave Serpent. Done.
If I could do this, if I ran the 8 Lehman Russ tank army that Paul wants me to run, I maybe could do it. Moving on down, Mr. Scott Thompson bringing Imperial Soup from Team Outlanders. I say Imperial Soup. What I really mean is, oh my God, I take it back. I'm not going to make fun of him for this. well, he did triple.
No,
Caladius,
no, you can make fun of him for this.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. 2 Palace grab tanks, 3 Caladius grab tanks, triple assassin, and then what? Is this the Rusty 18?
Yeah, this is a Rusty 17.
I thought it was Rusty 18.
It's Rusty 17.
What's the difference?
Okay. You're adding one too many models.
All right, 5, fair enough.
Plus 5, plus 5, 15, plus 2, 17. Yay!
All right. That's why Schwartz is the banker on this show.
Yes, because I can count to 17.
Look, ever since playing X-Wing, I've stopped being able to count at 8.
Oh, God.
That's a whole other problem you have.
Yeah, seriously. We need to have an intervention. But anyway, moving on. This is...
You can't take that from me.
You just like this list because there's 3 assassins.
I do like the list because it's 3 assassins. Tyler DeVries of Team Beast Coast. This should be fun. Dear God. 3 Caladius grav tanks, 3 of the aforementioned Scorpius disintegrators, and the Emperor's Fist Tank Company with 2 tank commanders and, 30 guardsmen?
Yeah, basically.
I like it.
I mean, this is just...
All the shooting...
Yeah. I was going to say exactly what you're going to say. All the shooting in the world that you ever need, plus enough bodies to hold objectives. Done.
I like that a lot.
It's simple. It works. It's not like 8th edition is renowned for its strategic depth anymore. Literally the name of the event starts with Warhammer 40k Major event, which is why I'm not confident in it.
Tau 1. Wow, there are 3 Tau in the top 5.
2 of them from Beast Coast. From the same team? Okay. I am going to butcher this guy's name. Do you think it's Einar? I'm going with Einar.
Sure.
Mr. Michael Einar, I apologize, sir, if I have this incorrect. Coming out with the classic 8th edition Tau list, better known as many Fire Warriors, 3 broadsides, all the shield drones. Looks like a pure X-85. What the hell? That's not the Cold Star, is it?
Yes, I believe. No, it's an Enforcer battle suit.
It's the regular one. And then triple Riptide. Triptide. Good old fashioned. With ATS and the burst cannon.
Basically, point, click, things die.
Point, click, delete.
Point, click, delete. Hold objective with tactical. Hold objective with strike team. Tactical drones. Take wounds for your actual shooting models. Rinse and repeat.
It's the select all edit. It's the edit select all delete button of lists.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, moving on.
Next up, chaos list. Mr. Austin Wingfield coming in with RM and a change caster, 30 horrors.
Wow.
What in the world is the flawless host?
It's the flawless host is a slum. Oh, bear with me for a second.
They're a Chaos Space Marine chapter.
The Flawless Host with the Soul Forge Pack Specialist Attachment. Yeah, okay, I know how this works. Make one of the Disco Lords your Warlord and run across the board at 16 inches a turn.
Nice.
Plus, he brought an Avenger double Gatling Knight and 2 Renegade Armigers.
All right, so basically tons of shooting and tons of in-your-face close combat. Call it done.
Sounds about right. And Renegade, remind me, Alex, Renegade Knights do not get any kind of demon benefits, right?
Nope, they cannot be affected in any way, shape, or form with the Lord Discordant.
Okay.
But the thing that you can do is just the Lord Discordant, honestly, bringing 3 Lord Discordants and 3, Chaos Knight Gallants would just be wonky because they're all so fast. That's not what he did here. Let me actually just double check something with this list anyways. Doesn't look like they specify on the army list whether or not he is iconoclast or infernal.
Well, it's renegade, not chaos.
Oh, they probably weren't using the Codex Chaos Knight rules yet.
No, this looks like it's all kind of the classic, the Avenger Gats, the Heavy Flamer, Heavy Stubber, and the Iron Storm Missile Pod, so it can't be a Chaos Knight, based on what you told me during our discussion, because they can't take the Missile Pod.
Yes, they can.
Oh, you said they couldn't. Alright, my bad.
The new class, the Rampager and the Desecrator, those two disjointed knights, the one, you know, the Exploding Six Gallant and the one with the laser gun, those ones can't take Carapace mounts. The spoiler class is still build your own knight.
Build a bear workshop. Let's.
I like how he couldn't figure out a way to implement that into a joke, so he just like stopped and was like,
"Build a bear workshop."
I wasn't. That was the joke. It's comedy by comparison. And just to remind myself, I get this now. The flawless host, death to the imperfect rule. Every time you roll a 6+ to hit with a model with this trait in the fight phase, you make an extra attack using the same weapon.
You give it to a Lord Discordant. What a surprise.
Three Discord Lords. Oh, man. God, the disco is so ridiculous.
It's good.
It just is. There isn't a way around it.
It was born for to disco.
Oh my God, stop.
Did you miss me, Alex? Did you miss me? Aww.
We did feel lesser without you, especially last episode. Next up, we've got Chris Stover of Team Beast Coast rocking, you know, daddy's favorite tap. Ooh, I take it back. What in the fuck? Yeah. How many Fire Warriors did he bring?
30.
That's a brigade. He brought a Tau Sept brigade with the Cold Star, Dark Strider. What? Just one Riptide, three broadsides, but then the rest is another Cold Star commander. But then 15 more Fire Warriors, three Cold Stars. Holy God. That's annoying.
He's bringing a crap ton of Fire Warriors, enough Cold Stars to act like a flyer list a la Eldar, and just enough broadsides to make it all work.
Just enough broadsides to make it so that if you charge the Fire Warriors, you're going to regret life decisions.
There you go.
I got to say, Michael, I really appreciate the like Martha Stewart voice you just did.
Yeah, that was pretty good, wasn't it?
And that's a good thing.
Can we have Schwartz doing ASMR podcast for us? And then count up the Firesight marksmen. I think I count, there's three of the marksmen and then two Cadre Fireblades. So he's got five Markerlites in this list. Not as many drones as you would normally see. Only, 12?
Yeah, but I mean, considering.
Kind of different.
I mean, considering the fact he's only bringing three broadsides and one Riptide, he doesn't need that many many drones. I mean, the strength of the list is just a magic crap ton of fire. I mean, the Fire Warrior shooting.
Yeah, I mean, that many pulse rifles, I think, 30, 45, I think it's 50 Fire Warriors backed up by Cadre Fireblades and an Ethereal.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of shooting.
By the way, we should give respect that he brought an Ethereal.
Well, I mean, Ethereal's pretty good given the fact that there's just so many bodies around.
Yeah.
When
you bring that many Fire Warriors, an Ethereal is going to be super useful.
Is that three shots per model after the Fireblade at 30 inches?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of brutal. And then we jumped down to just the next gentleman in fourth place, Ryan Christensen, also of Team Beast Coast. You have to wonder how often they practice against each other.
Fancy meeting you here.
Very nice. God, I hope they played each other in the last game too. Double hammerhead with a Sky Ray, long strike. Jesus, he brought six hammerheads. Two Cadre Fireblades. Two Devilfish, Fish of Fury 2.0 maybe perhaps, Only the one COD, only one Cold Star Commander and one regular Commander.
Wait, how can you bring six?
Because two of them have the heavy bombardment gun. They're two of the Forge World ones.
Got it. Okay.
And then the ion cannon.
Okay. Cool.
Three of the ion cannon ones, actually. That's pretty incredible.
Well, I mean, they're super efficient if you want. They're pretty good.
Well, they're not super efficient. They're good.
Yes.
But they're not as good as the railgun.
All right. Fair. So, pulling up the heavy bombardment hammerhead. Oh, this is just a ton of smart missiles. So, the bombardment hammerhead gunship. My God. These words. Two high-yield missile pods.
Oh, they're HYMPs. Yeah. Okay. Oh,
yeah, so he's packing two of those.
He's using those in lieu of broadsides.
Yeah, because there's eight shots, strength 7 minus 1, D3 damage. That is a lot of shooting. You're packing seeker missiles. Okay, yeah, I can see how this works.
Well, I mean, it's nothing special. He's just using hammerheads instead of broadsides.
Yeah, basically.
That's all this. Like, he's got a wall of tanks. Almost no infantry to screen for them. He's just daring you to run across the board into that many autocannon equivalents. Really? Not nearly as many marker lights as I would like with a list like this, but he did bring three of them.
Oh, there's...
then two devilfish and a bunch of... say it with me, guys. Breachers OP.
Breachers OP.
Man, with all the Tau talk, I really wish Paul was on this episode.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, Schwartz, why couldn't your timing be better?
Jesus, leave me alone. I'm glad I'm back. I think your audience is glad I'm back too.
Did you think you were gonna get back without getting shit on just a little bit?
That's a fair point. I'm sorry, guys. I apologize.
I'm gonna apologize to us, apologize to our listeners.
Exactly. They did miss you a lot. We're gonna wrap this out by talking about the Central Valley Showdown, which more than a few of our friends went to. I actually talked to 7th place player Anthony D'Amore, and there was quite a bit of salt around this event. We're going to let Alex lead this one just because I want his opinion on first and third place.
Oh, I thought that there was a different type of salt that you wanted to discuss. And if so, I didn't know if that was something that you wanted to talk about or not.
No, but we can save that for after. But that could come up after this. I don't know what kind of salt you're talking about. All lowercase. So let's take a look at Ulysses Sanders Necrons. Or no, I'm sorry. I believe this is Michael Timpey. No, it is Ulysses. It is Ulysses.
No, this is not. Oh, this is Ulysses. What are you talking about? So, you know, Ulysses' list, it's basically one that I've been playing at my league for some time. It's actually a more simplified version of what I've been bringing. Because I bring a battalion, of minimum immortals. I bring a Trox Stalker. For reroll hits, I bring 3 Doomsday Arcs, 14 Tomb Blades, and 3 Doom Scythes. He actually went, you know what? I don't really care as much about my CP. And he said, you know what? Fuck off with OPSEC. So he brought three Doom Scythes and an Air Wing. This is all Sawtech. I don't see it.
Assume if it's Sawtech. If it's not Sawtech, assume it's Sawtech.
It's a less competitive choice. Or
he, has two huge chunks of Tomb Blades, a 9-man and an 8-man unit, it looks like. He then has 5 Destroyers, which is a good mix. Haven't used those in a while. Then he has 3 DDAs, a Cryptech, and Emotech. So, you know, the extra CP from having Emotech around is always helpful. Emotech will only really be able to use My Will Be Done on the Immortals or himself. So he'll be able to My Will Be Done the Immortals to be +1 to... I mean, not the Immortals, the Destroyers to be +1 to hit. I'm sure that the Cryptech is going to have the Veil of Darkness, so the Tomb Blades move up, the Destroyers teleport turn 1 or turn 2 with the Destroyers nearby the Tomb Blades all together. The Destroyers are hitting on 2s, yep. Rerolling all failed hits and wounds because of the stratagem, and he just tries to do as much work as he can in 1 or 2 turns. Between that and the stratagem that the Doom Scythes have. So, you know, when you look at his matchups, I'm sure he's talented and a great player. And, you know, it's no easy feat to get a GT win. You know, that doesn't, it's going essentially 4-0-1 is not easy at almost any event, especially since second place. Our friend Jessica, you know, she went 4-1, so you know, there was no undefeated player. But you know, ITC strictly speaking, you know, technically correct, which is, you know, the best form of correct.
I love Futurama. I completely forgot. I guess I forgot about that one, but fine.
I absolutely remember that Futurama, Alex. Don't worry, I'm with you there.
You know, when you look at his matchups, a lot of them. I mean, turn you know, round one, he fought against current brand new chaos list with double knight rampagers and double gat knight, you know, a Armin, three sorcerers and two sorcerers and a bunch of horrors and two change casters.
Yeah.
So all in all, he's got the shooting firepower to kill everything but those knights in one turn, or kill all those knights and then
mop the rest,
up and wipe the floor with the rest. Yeah, so you know, his first round game is really easy matchup. You know, almost all these games, he seems to just kind of wreck face. Game two, also against Chaos Knights with an oblong amount of War Dogs and a Knight Despoiler, a you know, basically Gallant class, then Mortarion, then Magnus. So I cannot think of an easier matchup. That's literally four armor girt patterns, one knight, Mortarion, and Magnus. That's not a lot of models, so they're going to be losing hold the objective almost every time. Between three Doomsday Arcs, three Doom Scythes, a bunch of Tomb Blades and things like that, you know, the Tomb Blades can just whittle down the you know, the Primarchs just because
Tomb Blades
the
too
volume of shots, and then, you know, that's what I meant, the Tomb Blades. The Destroyers will focus on one thing,
yeah,
and probably kill one thing a turn, possibly, besides Mortarion. You know, all in all, I really don't need to go into detail here. It's just it's a good matchup for him. Turn three, it looks like that was the one that was, or round three seems to be his, you know, his draw, and that was against specifically Death Guard list. You know, it's going to be Necrons are going to have a real hard time moving Mortarion. You know, a bunch of Death Shroud, three Death Shroud Terminators, one Dorito Dreadnought, and two Leviathan Dreadnoughts, and then just adding the two Plague Burst Crawlers on top. That's a real tough game for him. You know, his fourth round game seems to just been a walk in the park. He fought against, so every, I believe every game was against Chaos. This one, I mean, his opponent only got 4 points. So without even looking at the list, I can tell you how the game went. Two Demon Princes, some Zangor Enlightened, units of Rubric Marines, Fire Raptor, and Magnus the Red.
Yeah, didn't last long.
His opponent only got 4 points. Yeah, it was 4-37, or 8-37, my apologies. And, you know, his last round was against three Dorito Dreadnoughts from the Purge and three Helldrakes and three Hellforge Contemptor Dreadnoughts and two Lord Discordants. So the problem is, each one of these were against chaos lists that were very heavy on low model count, high number of very
specifically vehicles.
And, you know, that's not really what this meta is all about right now. So a lot of these were just very oblong chaos lists, and he has a Necron list that just has an answer for that specific in a vacuum kind of army. So he just happened to fight against different but varying lists every single round. So I mean, it's again going 4-0-1. That's a great achievement. But I also think that was very much related to the luck of the matchup for sure, especially when he had to, you know, navigate and kind of dance around, you know, Jessica's Imperial list, you know, looking at even Michael Tempe's Necron list, which, you know, is much different, but, you know, they would just basically cancel each other out with the amount of just like, ignore damage. But even our good friend Paul, you know, he brought three strike teams, two hazard support teams. Hazard support teams. Sorry, that came out. Cold Star. You brought Remoras.
I'm glad Alex laughed at that and I didn't. That way I don't have to face Paul when he listens to this back.
Ah, it's fine. He loves me. Yeah, you know, he's got a real strange list. I don't know what's going on there. We're going to have him back on the podcast and he can tell us a little bit about the secret sauce here.
Well, Paul has always played Tao a little differently than everybody else.
I mean, the man plays Ninja Tao.
That's not Ninja Tao. That's bad Tao.
Oh, wow.
Anymore. Mechanically, Ninja Tao doesn't.
Yes, that's white Ninja Tao. That's weep Tao. Wow.
Oof. Hey, man, we're talking about disrespect. That's all you, man.
I'll own it.
No, I know you won't.
Wow.
Plus, he's our teammate. Right. It's our job to bash him at all times.
Yeah, makes sense. I'm with it.
Plus, it is always nice to see two of our teammates doing well, with Anthony and Paul finishing, I think, in what, like fifth and eighth?
Fifth and eighth, yes, sir.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Anthony's list here.
Yeah, Anthony D'Amore, famed Death Watch player. Let's talk about the double watch captain, all the Hellblast. Oh my god.
Yeah, dude, it's a lot of shooting.
Five in plasma incinerators and five bolt rifles in his first two squads. Then a big brick. What is that? Four? Is that five aggressors?
He likes to run a lot of them.
Jesus, this is crazy.
Yeah, that he does.
That's 15 aggressors, 3x5.
Yeah, that's
no two.
I was gonna say two by five is his MO. He likes the DACA.
And then the Reavers. That's the little the new scouts, right? Basically, somewhere between an assault marine and a scout.
What? No, the infiltrators are the new scouts.
No, Reavers are the ones that came out when the
yeah Reavers are
yeah right they're kind of in between
the infiltrators. Yeah, the infiltrators are the new ones. These are mediocre. These are night hot wannabes.
Okay, and then his real trademark, which is the double Zyphon interceptor.
Yeah, those are the bad boys.
Those things fucking hurt.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, when you're getting four LAS cannons and the Zyphon missile battery out, you know, at about 220 points, plus they're reasonably tough, and if you're another flyer, they just laugh at you even harder. Oh my god, he beat Paul round one.
Wait, what are you talking about? He played Paul in the last round.
Last round, you're right. It came up first when I looked up under placings. Leave me alone.
Round five. Yeah, but it makes a big difference, because if Paul beats Anthony, for example, Anthony's the one who's in eighth and Paul's the one who's in fifth or fourth. It's like,
man, and we know how much that probably meant to Anthony.
Probably goes both ways.
That's probably fair. So first round, he clapped the shit out of Anthony Odell's Yanari and Dark Eldar, where he brought the Yinkarn, Urien Rakarth, a lot of Grotesques, a lot of Racks, six Talos, and what am I counting here? Only two Venoms. He brought a lot of Kabbalizer with only two Venoms.
Mazel tov for bringing in.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why Anthony whooped the shit out of him, honestly. Yeah. Round two, up against Chris Nelson, who brought he brought Jim Vassal's list, but not as good.
Sorry, that's kind of amazing.
It's the Poxbringer, Biopiper, and Changecaster. Actually, it's TJ's list. It's a lot closer to TJ's list. Double Plague Bearer, Big Bricky of Horrors, and then Armin, double Zinch Wing Princes, and then a Nurgle Wing Prince, and the Blightlord Terminators. It's TJ's list.
There you go.
The copycatting has begun. Round three, Mr. David Singer. Oh, this wasn't even fair. Admech Infantry with a double Onagers, and Jesus, he brought five Iron Strider Belastarius. No, I don't remember what the Cognos rule does anymore.
It's just for Overwatch.
You can hit plus one to hit Onagers.
Jesus. Yeah. You know what that means? That means Anthony didn't go. That means Anthony went first, or he'd have lost both the Zyphons probably right away.
I mean, he could also put them out of range in some wisdom clever deployment.
Well, that would depend on deployment.
Yeah, it would depend on deployment.
Because remember, the Iron Striders move like the Dragoons.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, I take it back. But yeah, he probably did go first. We can ask him. I'll ask him this weekend.
Round four is Anthony's. Looks like Anthony's own first loss or only loss.
Loss.
Only loss against Mr. Luke Jessic. Okay, yeah, he was supposed to lose to this list. This is also the. This is one that we just mentioned, which is the Nurgle Demon Prince. I think it's Nurgle. Yeah, it's Nurgle Demon Prince with a bunch of Death Shroud Terminators, and then double Plague Burst Crawler and one Dorito Dreadnought and two Leviathan Dreadnoughts. Mm. Where it's just Anthony's shooting just tickled it. That's all it did.
A light tickle.
I mean, between the Butcher Cannons and the Plague Spitters and the fact that he just probably couldn't wound anything. Like, that's a tough roll of the dice right there, buddy. And then, of course, playing Paul in the last round and clapping his cheeks probably made Anthony very happy.
Ew.
Jesus Christ. I should not have said that on this podcast. Oh, man, that's a lot of events. It's nice to be back into the swing. The cupboard was a little bare there for a couple weeks.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're getting closer to Nova, and people are and WarGamesCon and all sorts of other, you know, really big events. So I'm sure people are going to want to practice, and the best way to practice for those tournaments is to continue to go to tournaments. So, you know, it doesn't seem too out of base or too off base.
Well, all right, guys, let's go ahead and wrap it up. Schwartz, thanks for coming back. Hopefully your schedule will allow you to make more returns in the future.
God, I hope so. yes, I plan to stay forever.
And Alex, let's go ahead and sign off.
Everyone have a good night.
Good night.
See you all next week, folks. Please like, share, subscribe to the podcast.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all the time thing. You don't win once in a while. And you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.